Oh man, so I started laughing whenever you came on because, oh, poor honey, you are so red.
I know. It's bad. But it's also the lighting in here. I have these bright little lamps that I'm using, like hurricane lamps, because I'm so tired of unplugging my bedside lamp and dragging it in here.
Right.
Every single time. So I have, they're like fluorescent bright.
They're very bright. This is the brightest
I've seen.
But
yes, my back is so bad. The worst spot is like right under where like the back of my bikini was. Yeah. It had strings, but where right before it clipped. So there are like long triangle sections right there that are normally covered by a bikini. So they have not had any exposure to sun.
Oh yeah.
And it's raw red. And of course that's where my bra sits. So I'm in pain all day during PD. I'm like, you know what? I deserved it for going out to the beach for 4.5 hours with no sunscreen.
Ugh, being a woman is so hard sometimes. But you do look tan and your hair looks very blonde. If you were going for that, you look pretty.
Thanks.
Do you want to mention what you were just talking about before we started recording? Because
yeah. So last night we went to Dave & Buster's for trivia. And my grandma tried to call while we were out, and it was in a loud bar area, so I wasn't gonna try and answer the phone because I wasn't gonna be able to hear her anyway. But she must have called Elise and kind of asked what was going on. But Elise came to Dave and Buster's last week, so she told her that I was probably at trivia, so I called her back whenever I got home. Hold on, close the door for.
He scared me when he moved just now. I was like, what is
he? I told him I'd lock him up like a criminal if he couldn't be quiet.
That's Kylo, not a person.
Yes. And I'm sure he's going to scratch on the door and it's going to be a whole thing.
It's going to be the
You will hear from him today. But anyway, I called her back when I was walking him last night and she's like, yeah, I was just missing all the grandkids and I was making my rounds and, you know, I had to get the Alabama kids out of the way first. And I just started laughing. I'm like, Mama, poor CJ and Nick getting them out of the way. And she's like, I saved the best for last. Cause I had asked her, I'm like, wouldn't it make sense to go from like oldest to youngest and work your way down the list? She's like, no, I had to get the Alabama kids out of the way first.
I was wondering because she called. Okay, so the order right now as it stands was CJ, Nick, Elise, me, and then she came to the house, so she didn't call Blake, and then you.
And Jake just gets left out because they're in Europe.
Well, boo-hoo on him.
Did you see that picture of him and Mom on the photo stream? She looks so happy and so excited, and the look on his face
is just cool.
Like, oh my god.
He's just too cool to be excited to be abroad in Brussels for an F1 race, and we're all here. But it's Shark Week when you guys are listening to this, so happy Shark Week, everyone. Hoorah.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, man. Oh, this is It's Hereditary.
Yes. This is Haley.
Yes. I'm Caroline.
At least someone remembered to introduce the podcast.
It's only because I have it written down in brackets and I just looked at our script. Oh, man. And are you guys
And we had to have a script written because Caroline is, she says she has a job, but I don't really fully believe her because she's been working nonstop on this script because we're doing the same topic this time. She wrote like 15 pages worth of stuff, y'all.
Look.
And then she had to go and like condense, and it was a whole thing. She would lose her mind and I'd start touching things. So this may be the last time we tag team. Who knows?
You effed with my margins, okay? I had to go and
I did tell
them.
You I effed with your margins. I can't. I'm technologically challenged. I can put the things in different colors. I could not get the margins to go. And I was watching you struggle with the margins. It was live. I was watching you edit it on my iPad. So, and it was like a little green line. It said Caroline, and watching you move around the screen.
I had to go look it up to see, because I was like, I need the margins to be this certain way. And gosh darn it, I'm going to do it. No, but it's been a slowish summer. So I've had a little bit of downtime. Breaks are important, and it's important to intellectually stimulate your mind. So yes, we tag teamed in this labor of love to bring you guys a 2-for-1 episode on the Winchester House.
Woo!
And as I was doing this, it just made me think of when I was buying my own house and how my dad, who's really good at negotiating things, was like, Caroline, be cool. Like, don't show any emotion if you like the house. Don't say anything. Act like you're not going to buy it. You need to be ready to walk away. And so I'm ready to go. Haley's laughing because she knows where this is going.
Because he went with me to get my car and I did not follow his instructions and he was ready to kill me.
Oh, so you were the opposite. Okay. So yes, he did go with you to get your car. I was fully ready. I was like, I'm not going to budge on this. I'm going to be serious. I'm going to look for every little thing that's wrong with it. And we walk in and he's just like talking to the realtor and he goes, this house is just great. He's running around the house at a tizzy and I'm like trying to mosey, act natural, be cool. I'm like, oh, the floor is a little bit bubbled here. Oh, there's a crack here. And my dad's like, Caroline, you need to buy this house right now. I'm like, Dad, well, like, see that window? That's where all my negotiating power just went. Out the window. Be quiet. Oh, man. I totally forgot he went with you to get your car, though.
Yeah.
And you were very uncool about it.
Very uncool about it.
Worth it, though. The car is beautiful.
I love my car.
Mm-mm. I see your note to mention our parents' trips. My mom didn't go in, so she has no story about the Winchester house.
So background there. Our parents are winos, and they like to take trips to Napa.
Our parents are bougie, is what they
and,
are.
And on my mom and dad's first trip to Napa, I think, for their wedding anniversary, they did do a tour of the Winchester house, and mom said it was real creepy.
Was that the trip where your dad lost, quote-unquote, his phone and his watch?
Oh, you are so sweet. My dad threw a temper tantrum and threw his Apple Watch in a river because he was drunk and it wasn't working because his phone was dead. So, and then threw the phone, like, down the path, and mom had to go find it and just tuck it quietly into her purse and just continue moving on.
Your mom telling that story is my favorite thing in the world.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
We'll have to have her on one day to just tell it to us. No, we're going to have to film it because she acts it out. And it gives me so much life.
But yeah, this last trip that they took, they went with Caroline's parent and they drove up to the house. They drove up to see it. But Caroline's mom was like, nope, I'm not doing it.
You could say like mother, like daughter. She just noped out of there.
And really, hindsight's 2020. I should have told mom. I knew we were doing this eventually. I should have told mom to go over with like some kind of recording device and get a story from the tour guide, like straight out for us to be able to use for the podcast. But
I was like, Mom, you have to go in and take pictures and tell me everything. Cause I think we already had it on our list of things to do. And she was like, okay. And then didn't go. Too many wineries, too little time.
Yeah.
I understand.
Well, considering they were like drinking and then they like passed out like all afternoon while my dad and your dad continued on and did their thing.
Did you see that picture of
them?
Did you see our dads in the reflection?
Yeah.
That's my favorite picture of all time. I'm going to have to see if we can post that. It's really delightful. We only have like 20 followers. No one's really going to know that we posted. I'll ask. So this ought to be interesting.
Yeah. This will either be a great thing that we're launching that we're going to do every now and again, or we will go, yeah, we're never doing that again.
I will say there's one part I cannot wait to get to because there's no way, like, it's just going to be awesome. I can't wait. So
I didn't read it other than the title because you had mentioned that that's what you were doing. And I'm like, oh, God.
I didn't read your part either. I just read, like, our history.
Yes, because Caroline's a little OCD, so she created a script for us, and you know us, we're going to go off script so fast, but it's okay.
We're already off script.
Derail.
I did the script because I thought that was what you wanted. I thought you wrote scripts.
I'm down with it. Because I know.
I do.
Well, I wouldn't write a script because it's just me talking, but I do write it like in paragraphs, like a narrative because I'm used to writing stories. You're testing out what works for you, and yours is more conversational, which works for you. It's great.
Trying to be mean, you're being so nice to me.
I love you.
I love you too. Okay, with that, buckle in, everyone, because this house, who does it have some twists and turns? And I'm not just talking about the stairs. We are going to tell you about the house, artfully known as the Winchester Mystery Mansion. This mansion sits at 525 South Winchester Boulevard in San Jose, California. Okay, I'm already going off script. It wasn't called South Winchester Boulevard when she moved in, was it?
No.
It would have been named that afterward. Okay. Correct. I don't know what the name was whenever she moved in. It was a farmhouse when she moved in, but we'll talk about it. Officially, no blueprints were drawn up and no architectural vision was ever created. It was, quote-unquote, simply the brainchild of Sarah Winchester, and until her death, the mansion was simply known as her house. And with that, take it away, Haley.
So, originally from New Haven, Connecticut, Sarah Lockwood Pardee, as born sometime in the mid-1800s, we don't know exactly when she was born, to Sarah Burns and Leonard Pardee, so she was named after her mother.
Yeah, that, like, really throws me off, because guys are named after their dads, but girls are not junior, and there's a woman on my mom's float, and the mom and the two daughters, so it's, like, two Sarahs, essentially, are on my mom's float crew from Mardi Gras. Sorry, we're a little Southern. And it just, like, throws me off that there's...
Yeah, I mean, I'm slightly used to it because I grew up watching Gilmore Girls, and that's what Lorelai did. But, I mean, Rory never went by Lorelai.
That's right.
She went by Rory.
I saw that note. I didn't know what it meant.
Also,
you could not have said party with more of a Southern accent than you did just now. So, congratulations. You've been in Florida for 2 years, and you still sound like you're from South Louisiana.
I knew there was no getting rid of it, especially, like, going back and listening to the recordings of the podcast. It comes out more when I talk to people from home. You, it's not as bad, but God forbid if somebody records me talking to Gaynell or my mom. Oh.
I do find we get bad whenever we're with each other, but I digress. Continue.
So, like I said, there's no definitive date of birth for Sarah, but everyone's best guess is that she was born in 1839 or 1840-ish. Regardless of the year of birth, the world Sarah was born into was one of privilege. Her father ran a progressive household, holding court with prominent abolitionists and free thinkers of the day, which we will get back to that later.
I so can't wait. Okay. Now, in her life of privilege, Sarah attended all the best schools. She spoke four languages.
I can barily handle one most days. Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
Exactly. Oh, man. I was just about to say that. You read my mind. She played three instruments well, not just, like, play them. Like, you know, I
So she wasn't just all. Playing chopsticks on the piano
play
with,
chopsticks
like...
Chopsticks with the chopsticks.
I can't play a single instrument, so.
I tell people that I play guitar, and I haven't played guitar in over a decade. But I have it sitting right in the corner right there.
We had a guitar in my house. My dad bought an electric guitar with Guitar for Dummies and played with it for all of, like, 2 weeks. And where did it end up? In Montgomery with CJ. Where it gathered dust in the corner of his house because he didn't play it.
Why does he have a guitar? I didn't know that.
Does it surprise you?
It does a little bit. I have to be kind of honest. It kind of does.
No, my dad, that's a classic Tim move.
No, it's a classic Tim move. I wasn't expecting the left
CJ?
Turn so I can just CJ playing the guitar.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know that he ever played it. I know it collected dust in the corner of his room. He thought it was a great idea at the time because I'm sure dad was able to, like, you know, convince him because he didn't want it in his house. So, hey, let me, like, push all of CJ's buttons to see what works and what sticks, and can I get this out of my house and sent to Alabama?
He, like, hey bands to get the guitar out. Oh, man. I called my dad once, and I think my mom was out of town at a conference or something. And I was like, hey, Dad, what you doing? And he kind of giggles. He's like, I'm actually practicing piano. And it was so cute because he, like, had his book and he, like, played a little bit for me. And I was like, aw. And so, like, my dad is actually learning, unlike me, who's like, yeah, I have a guitar there, but it's missing a string and it's way out of tune. Oh, man. I mean, I suppose it's a little credit to me that I know it's out of tune, right? I mean, that's got to count for something. Why are you being quiet?
That you're not tone deaf?
You paused for too long. Okay, anyway.
I was just kind of like going, whoa, we really derailed here.
I mean, come on. This is who I am. I'm a derailer.
All right.
Sarah grew to the Southern giant size of 4'10" and clocked in at a whopping 95 pounds. So basically, she was my mother before she had me.
Your mother has her doctor, like, trained very well that he tells her that she is 5 foot and she is not. She's what, 4'11 and a half?
Wait, I do have a story from one of my friends, and she might kill me for saying this. I don't even know if she listens, but.
Yes, she does. You know your mom does.
No. I'm talking about, I have a story about my friend with height.
Oh, okay.
So shout out to you. She was at my house one time, and we had gotten like food delivered by waiter or something. And the guy opens the door, and I go to like sign the check, and she's behind me to grab the food. And I hear him go, 4'10"? And I was like, what? Like, is that the tip? What are you talking about? And she goes, 4'11", and shuts the door. I was like, what just happened? And she goes, he just asked me what my height was. And so I told him. Or maybe he said 4'11", and she's like, no, 4'10". And I was like, is this like a question? Does this happen to you a lot? And she's like, yeah, I just know. I'm like, oh, no.
I feel like I heard that story before.
I think I have. It's one of my favorite stories. Bless her heart. She's a little spitfire, though. Whew. A lot of fun. And we're still talking about what Sarah looks like. And I was worried this was going to be a short episode.
We're going to be here all night.
Good thing we started early. With her looks and talent, it's not too surprising that Sarah came to be known around town as the Belle of New Haven. This would also make it unsurprising that she married fellow New Haven royalty William Wirt Winchester. That's www.winchesterrifle.com.
Except not.
No, of the Winchester rifle fame. The two married on September 30th, 1862. William Wirt Winchester, as mentioned, whew, that is going to be a tongue twister. I hope we're done saying all of those words.
I think it's William from here on out, okay, so I think we're okay.
He was heir to the Winchester Repeating Arms Company, formerly known as the New Haven Arms Company. The Winchester rifle was a staple of Westerns, as in like the movie, and also the region, and arguably the most iconic weapon of the 1800s. In fact, the Winchester Model 1873 was known as quote-unquote the gun that won the West. Customers of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company, I was going to say, do you want to guess, but you have the script in front of you. They included Buffalo Bill Cody, Annie Oakley, and one President Theodore Roosevelt. So got
I love Teddy Roosevelt.
Famous guns, quote unquote. Oh, I had a history teacher that loved Teddy Roosevelt, and I feel like we spent an entire semester on him. It was grueling.
I only love Teddy Roosevelt because of the, what is it, Night at the Museum movies? Mm-hmm. It's Robin Williams. May he rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. On July 12, 1866, the same year that Oliver Winchester, William's father, renamed his company to his surname as opposed to his hometown, Sarah gave birth to their only daughter, Annie. The couple was over the moon, as all new parents would be, but unfortunately their joy was short-lived. Annie died 6 weeks after she was born of a childhood illness known as marasmus, which is malnourishment caused by calorie and protein deficiency. Sarah was only in her late 20s at the time that her daughter died.
Can you imagine?
Ugh. I know,
like,
right?
Losing a child is terrible, but being so young too. Ugh.
Yeah. And to make matters worse, a few short decades later in 1881, Sarah's husband William died suddenly of tuberculosis.
Ugh.
So, with no husband or daughter, Sarah was completely alone, and with no father-in-law, she was rich beyond imagination.
Rolling in it, money, money, money. So with William and Oliver dead, the family estate went to Sarah, who at the time inherited about $20 million, which is over $500 million in today's money.
Damn.
I know. And 50% of the Winchester Arms Company, which left her with a continued income of about $1,000 a day or $26,000 a day today.
Holy.
That's like Bill Gates rich. Like, I can't even fathom.
I can't even. No. I cannot even imagine that kind of money.
And then it's just her. Like, she doesn't have kids or a husband. Like, it's just her. That's so much money.
Charity.
Yeah. And I think she does. I don't know if I wrote it down anywhere, but I think she does. Leave like a good portion of it to a charity in New Haven before she moves, but we'll get to that.
So now, in the possession of a massive fortune and struggling with the loss of her family, Sarah sought out the advice of a medium, as you do.
You mean, wait, you mean you don't do that whenever you need advice?
No.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I tried talking to Kylo, but he's not really much help.
Yeah, he's probably a good listener, though.
Yeah, well... He does interrupt me a lot. He's very vocal.
Look, the twilight bark is important. Okay.
I know. While presumably looking for solace or closure, what Sarah found instead was a chilling warning. Because, of course, you can't get great messages from beyond. The medium, allegedly channeling her husband William, advised Sarah to leave her home in New Haven and head west to California. Quote-unquote William told her that their tragedies were the result of blood money that the family had made off selling the Winchester rifles. He said to use the fortune she'd inherited to build a home for the spirits of those who'd fallen victim to the Winchester rifles, lest she be haunted by them for the rest of her life. And she believed that with every cell in her body. Mm. In 1860, the company developed the Henry rifle, which had a tubular magazine located under the barrel. Because it was easy to reload and could fire rapidly, the Henry was said to average one shot every 3 seconds. Mm. It became the first true repeating rifle and a favorite among the northern troops at the outbreak of the Civil War.
Whew, yeah, it's a lot of angry spirits to deal with.
Yeah.
I do want to say, I know I'm like laughing about the medium thing, but I had a friend that I never would have thought would have gone to a medium, because she's kind of like me. Like, we see each other at church on Sunday. It's actually kind of funny. And grew up in a small town like me. Like, we laugh that we've essentially had kind of the same lives, just in different towns. And then she pulls out one day. She's like, yeah, I got these tickets and I went to this really famous medium. And I can't remember the name of it, but she's like, Caroline, like, I'm not kidding, like, people came through. So I do think there's another plane and there is some merit. And I mean, I don't know, I mean, like, why would a medium tell her to move west? Like, if they were lying, like, wouldn't you want them to stay and spend more money with you? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
So as much as I like nervously giggle because it makes me nervous, I mean, I've heard stories from people, and it's a you know, some people do find the answers they're looking for through mediums, and I don't know. It's interesting, to say the least.
Well, the medium had one little message for Sarah. She said, "You must start a new life and build a home for yourself and for the spirits who have fallen from this terrible weapon, too. You can never stop building the house. If you continue building, you will live. Stop, and you will die."
Mm, so it's ever building. Dog ear that. We'll circle back.
Yep.
Oh, my card, sorry. Yeah, so Sarah, taking the medium's advice, as I mentioned, a little too seriously for my taste, purchased a home in the Santa Clara Valley in the middle of the 1880s. Now, at the time, it was a small, unfinished farmhouse with 6 to 8-ish rooms, but don't worry, it wouldn't stay that way for long. She, Joanna Gaines, the shit out of this house.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah quickly hired carpenters to work around the clock, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, for 38 years. That's 3-8. The house slowly expanded to a sprawling Queen Anne-style Victoria mansion. And in the end, it cost about $5 million in today's money to build. Which, you know, looking at her $500 million fortune in today's money is chump change. Now, in the midst of hiring all these workers, there was one noticeably absent hire, which was an architect. Sarah was the sole architect, and no master plan was ever uncovered. It was constructed haphazardly, and it's probably because it came from her or the other entities that perhaps are living in the house.
Yeah. So, rooms were added onto exterior walls, resulting in windows overlooking other rooms.
That's so creepy.
Multiple staircases would be added, all with different size risers, which gave each staircase a distorted look. I'm sorry, I can barely handle regular stairs. Mm-hmm. I'd bust my face.
Yeah.
Doors would open to solid walls or lead to nothing, except for one that opens to a 2-story drop.
Want to drop in.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Hallways would turn a corner and end in a dead end. I was looking at videos of people walking through that house, and I felt claustrophobic. Like,
yeah.
The hallways got really tight, the staircases were narrow, mm-hmm. and the ceilings got really low in certain parts of the house. I'm not claustrophobic, but it was giving me anxiety just looking at it.
I saw a picture of a lady who, I don't know, maybe in the 70s or 80s, and she, because it was a black and white picture, maybe not the 80s, but she was like up one of the stairs that led to a ceiling, and it just like gave me the heebie-jeebies. I didn't like it. Not one bit.
Yeah. Other bizarre demands include trapdoors, secret passages, a skylight in the floor, which I don't know that would necessarily make it a skylight.
Did you see the pictures of it?
No. And they had spiderweb windows.
Yes. I thought the skylight in the floor was interesting because I was thinking the same thing. Like, if it's in the floor, how is there light? But I think they're on, like, second, third, fourth, seventh story, like, floors. And I feel like I have actually seen them. It literally is. It's just like a pane of glass in the floor, and they have like a banister around it, and it kind of just lets in natural light. Like, it's kind of nice. But I don't know if those banisters were always around it, so you definitely have to watch where you were going. Or
make sure you didn't step through glass. Yeah.
Have to be real careful. Oh, yeah, and I love this part. Because my favorite number. I graduated in the class of 2013. It was my sport number. 13 is my number. And it was also obvious that it was Sarah's number. Nearly all of the windows in the house contained 13 panes of glass. The walls had 13 panels. There were many 13-paneled ceilings. The greenhouse had 13 cupolas. Many of the wooden floors contained 13 sections, and some of the rooms had 13 windows. Every staircase but one had 13 steps. The house's 13th bathroom had 13 windows. And my favorite part, even Sarah's will had 13 parts, and she signed it 13 times, which I have decided that I am also doing with my will.
You would.
I would. Now, all of this, we'll circle back. This is like a prime number, and it's big in conspiracy and secret society. So we'll circle back. God. Don't you roll your eyes at me. You're going to love taking this trip down the rabbit hole with me, but we'll get back to it.
Okay.
I made a note that I thought it was really funny in the list that I found. I know you found some of these, but the information that I found about the 13 panels, it was a list of 14 things to know about the Winchester House, but it was number 12 on the list. And I just thought it was
missed opportunity there.
It was a really, like, awfully missed opportunity. So, come on, guys, be better. So, Sarah compulsively built and rebuilt the house, and many of the alterations seemed pointless, at least to us. We mentioned about the hallways. Some say that they would twist and turn in an attempt to confuse the spirits that plagued her. And some psychologists believe this haphazard design contributes to the feeling of the house being haunted today. So maybe it's not. Maybe it just gives that ooky spooky feeling that you can't like really explain, but like psychologically has a thing in your brain. Or maybe it actually is haunted. I don't know what the simpler definition is, but...
Despite all these oddities, some of the techniques Sarah used were actually ahead of her time. She was the first person to use wool insulation in her house. Mm. She installed carbide gas lights, which combined calcium carbide and water, and they were actually used by miners in the early 20th century. She used a panel to control those lights and electricity in her house. She also had steam and forced air heating, as well as indoor toilets, though not all of them worked, and I don't know if cover that at any point later.
No, I don't.
Oh, yeah. She only had one real working bathroom in the house. The others were all fake to confuse the spirit.
Even bathrooms?
Yeah.
What use do they have for bathrooms?
I don't know. Huh. That's just what I was told. Okay. And she installed one of the first indoor showers, complete with a sewage drainage system.
Mm. Woman after my own heart. So, thank you, Sarah, for all the long pep talks and closed concerts that I've enjoyed in the shower, personally.
I get so self-conscious singing in the shower because I feel like my neighbors are going to be like, what the hell, is there a cat dying somewhere? So,
I know my roommate can hear me and I do it anyway.
So while all of this seems like madness to us, it all made sense to Sarah. It's plain to see that she designed her house like a maze or a labyrinth. It's my favorite word because it's my favorite movie. supposedly, with the house designed this way, she could control the spirits who came to the house for evil purposes.
Oh, yes. And even, I don't know why I put me down to cover this. I think I didn't know if you had any information on it, so I just said I'd do it. But
have fun!
Sarah even had a seance room, which... equipped with a talking board and a planchette, which is just a Ouija board before it was branded and sold in a little box at Barnes & Noble by Hasbro. She would allegedly use it to confer with spirits on the design of her house. And I only read this in one place, but I thought it was so funny, so I wanted to include it. She'd ring an alarm bell at midnight to signal that it was seance time. Like, hey, gather around everyone. Tell me what you like and don't like about the house. Let's hear it. Do we love it or list it? And then she'd ring again at 2 a.m. to tell the spirits, all right, time to go. Like, good talk.
Bedtime.
It's bedtime. This seems a little exhausting, though, doing this every night. So I'm thinking she probably didn't, but we're going to add that part to little folklore for...
But also, she lived by herself, so maybe she did.
Maybe she did. I mean, she did, quote-unquote, live by herself, but she had, like, a lot of, like, house help that lived with her.
Right, right.
So, I mean, maybe, I don't know. But, yeah. Now, although if you're hesitant to buy into the whole Winchester curse and that the house is haunted or whatever... if you're a skeptic like Blake, it is possible that Sarah continuously added to and renovated her California home as a way to deal with her grief. It could have reminded her of building her home in New Haven with her late husband William and just reminded her of happier times. Mm-hmm. Now, just everyone pull out those tinfoil hats, get them nice and ready. Others say the symbolism in Sarah's house points not to ghosts or to insanity, but to Sir Francis Bacon. So we'll come back to that. Stop shaking your head at me. You're going to love this. Trust me. Now,
she's so excited.
Oh my gosh. I'm just going to save it, but it's going to be a real treat. Now, once Sarah was moved into the Winchester house, she was reclusive, but she was not alone, as I mentioned. And no, I'm not talking about the spirits that may or may not have lived in the house. There's only one known photo of the widow Winchester, which was taken kind of like surreptitiously, like it's not like she posed for it. She was in constant contact with 18 servants, 18 gardeners, and the ever-present construction team. She also met with the foreman every morning to discuss the ever-evolving plans, presumably after her 12 a.m. meeting with the spirits.
Sarah built the house out and up, and it may have kept going were it not for an earthquake that shook the San Francisco Bay Area in 1906. Before the great earthquake, it was 7 stories tall. Today, it's only 4 stories.
And I love how it's like, it's only 4 stories. Like, I don't even
That's still
know 4
huge.
Story houses. Yeah, it's huge.
But the top 3 stories did collapse in that earthquake in 1906. Mm-hmm. So during the earthquake, the top 3 floors of the house collapsed into the gardens and would never be rebuilt. As if that weren't enough, the fireplace that was located in what they called the Daisy Room, where coincidentally Sarah was sleeping on the night of the earthquake, she apparently switched rooms each night to confuse the spirits. So the fireplace collapsed, shifting the room and trapping Sarah inside. She became convinced that the earthquake had been a sign from the spirits, who were furious that she had nearly completed the house. In order to ensure that the house would never be finished, she decided to board up the front 30 rooms of the mansion so that the construction would not be complete. Also, so that the spirits who fell when that portion of the house collapsed will be trapped inside forever.
Well, it's creative. She's problem solving.
You have to, I mean. The only thing that saved that house from being completely destroyed in that earthquake was what they called a floating foundation, which for all you non-engineers and architects like me, I had to look up what that meant. That allows the house to shift freely because it's not completely attached to its brick base.
Okay.
So the house was shifting during that earthquake as it shook, and it kept it from completely cracking and breaking down.
Gotcha.
So today, the house only covers about 4.5 acres, but at its most expansive, Sarah's mystery mansion was 24,000 square feet, covering 162 acres of land. So it's just enough for the house and like the outer buildings now. It's estimated that there were about 161 rooms. Like we said, it was 7 stories tall. It's 4 now. And it had 2 basements. So for those of you that are scared of just the 1 basement, it had 2.
No, thank you.
Because there were too many ghosts in 1 that they had to have another one.
I know. How do you think that works? Do you think it's like you have 1 and then you have 1 under it? Or you just have like 1, like 2 right by each other? I mean, I don't know. I don't have a basement.
I mean, you could have 1 on one side. That house was huge. You could have 1 on one side of the house and then another staircase on the other side of the house that went to a separate second basement.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
The people that bought the house upon Sarah's death tried to get an accurate count of the rooms, but they kept coming up with different numbers because that house is so dang confusing. So eventually they just estimated and said, it's about 161.
When I was reading that part, I just kept seeing, like, 3 or 4 people running about the house, be like, okay, get a count of rooms, go. And like one comes, is like, I got 160. And then I was like, I got 161. Like they just keep coming back at different numbers. And eventually they're just like, fuck it, 161.
Count, it's fine. It's good.
Just
enough.
Scrambling around me like, how are we missing these rooms?
Yeah. So the house also had 3 elevators of, I guess, the 161 rooms. There were 6 kitchens, 40 stairways, 47 fireplaces,
hazard,
52 skylights, 950 doors, and 10,000 panes of glass. And Sarah didn't skimp on adornments. The house had chandeliers and, of course, Tiffany glass windows.
It's just so opulent. I truly can't even really imagine it. Where do 6 kitchens go? Where am I going to put 47 fireplaces? Like, I
really for one person.
For one person. It's so crazy. Oh. Yeah, so as we mentioned, work on the house continued for over 3 decades, and it only ended on September 5th, 1922, when Sarah passed away of congestive heart failure. And supposedly, upon hearing news of Sarah's death, the carpenters quit so abruptly that they left half-hammered nails protruding from the walls. I don't know what like why they would have kind of thrown that tantrum. Like having a person who wants to always build a house and like have to keep building and rebuilding it seems like pretty good job security to me, but like that's just me.
Maybe they were scared of whatever those spirits would do once she was gone.
Ooh, you always take the spooky route and scare me. We always find our way here.
Yeah. So upon her death, Sarah left all her possessions to her niece. It took 6 weeks to get everything out of the mansion because the movers kept getting lost in the house.
It's like the ultimate game of Marco Polo.
Can you imagine trying to move like a couch, like pivot, but then you're like, there's a wall there.
Can't pivot anymore. Just throw it out the door with a 2-story drop and someone will catch it.
Right. The house, surprisingly, was deemed worthless by appraisers, and that house is beautiful. We're going to post pictures of it on social media. I love that Victorian-style house, mm-hmm. but it is stunning. I've never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. But it was deemed worthless due to the damage from the earthquakes. It was sold at an auction to a private investor who then leased it to John and Mamie Brown for about 10 years before they bought the house themselves. They opened it to the public for tours in February of 1923, only 5 months after Sarah's death.
Ain't even cold yet.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Yeah, so Sarah's mansion ended up earning landmark status. That's national landmark status, not just California landmark status. On August 7th, 1974, you can still get a tour of the house, which our mothers did not do, even after I asked.
Your mother did not do. Mine did.
Well, I wanted them both to go again. But if you're around for Halloween or on a Friday the 13th, the tour is supposed to have a little something extra. It's supposed to be extra special on those ooky spooky days. So,
and there is a reason for that.
Oh, no.
Apparently, Winchester House was named one of the most haunted places in the world by Time Magazine.
Ugh, tell me why.
So my thing is, the question for me is the house itself haunted or was Sarah haunted and the ghost left when she did? So that was kind of my mindset when I started doing my my research, like trying to figure out, is this house actually haunted or was she just the one being followed by these spirits and they were content and disappeared when she did?
Huh.
So, there is a space in the house called the Witch's Cap in the south turret. That's it's like a rounded room, and it's rounded in such a way that your voice echoes around the room, mm-hmm. supposedly making it the perfect space for a séance. Which I don't know if that was where she did her séances, or that's just where they decided after she died that was a decent place.
Yeah.
But the person who decided that was the perfect place for a seance was none other than Harry Houdini.
Goes all the way to the top.
Yep. Houdini saw that room and decided to come for a tour in Halloween around Halloween of 1924, which was right after Sarah's death. Mm. She died in 1923. Houdini at the time was famous for debunking mediums, and he visited the house to hold a midnight seance.
No.
Mm-hmm. He was looking to prove that the house wasn't haunted. A tour guide at the house claims that after the seance, Houdini's skepticism regarding seances and spirits was somehow shaken. However, others say he was completely unaffected. Nobody knows what actually happened. Later, he sent a copy of an article in a newspaper to the owner of the house where he did actually mention his trip. According to this guy on this magic cafe forum where I was, you know, scrolling
around at the Magic Cafe forum.
Desperate. I actually found a link to a picture of the article, and I'm going to read a section from that article.
Okay.
Houdini makes it clear that he considers the building an example of the mental ills which purportedly befall believers in spiritualism.
Ooh. Yeah, I read that, like, briefly. I didn't read into it because I didn't want to because, you know, I don't come for the hauntings, you guys do. But I liked how they were like, Houdini didn't say that there were spirits in the house, but he also didn't say that there weren't. And, like, apparently he was very vocal whenever there weren't. And, like, that was kind of a big thing, which I just thought was funny.
Well, Houdini's thing was, so he offered $5,000 to any spiritualist medium that he is unable to expose mm-hmm. in 3 seances, mm-hmm. declaring that such people profited on the gullibility of sorrow-stricken husbands, fathers, sweethearts, and mothers who wished to communicate with loved ones in the spirit world. So that's what he decided was he was going to do. Okay. And I'm reading this from that article. I have to scroll. Hold on.
Yeah, you were looking at the screen and it was freaking me out. And
I have to, like, seriously zoom, and I can't do that on my phone because it's just...
Gotcha.
It's a picture of this newspaper article, so it's very blurry. So, illustrative of the extremes to which belief in communion with the spirit world will drive people, Houdini cited that the case of the widow of the founder of the Winchester Arms Company. He was in Mrs. Winchester's home in San Jose, California at midnight one night last week. 37 years ago, Mrs. Winchester was told by a spiritualist that the reason a person dies is because that person does not continue to build additions to the house in which she lives. The spirit rots in the house that doesn't grow, is what that spiritualist declared. So consequently, Mrs. Winchester has been adding to her home for 37 years. Now it has 160 rooms, 2,000 doors, an innumerable number of windows, and two large buckets are required to hold the keys. Some rooms have as many as 14 doors.
That's too many doors in a room.
He said, this whole thing is beautifully inlaid because the woman wants the workmen to take plenty of time. Never was there such a marvelous place. There is a seance room without corners so that the spirits won't hurt themselves on the corners of the room.
No, I don't like
coming
that.
In and out. What? And Mrs. Winchester has a vast wardrobe of variously colored robes, and she uses a different robe for each spirit. That's all in the article. That is the only thing that he says about her. And then, like, there's other things about other spiritualists and stuff. But that's what Harry Houdini had to say.
Well, Mr. Houdini, glad you can make it.
So again, welcome. It's just, most people say that he wasn't affected at all. Mm-hmm. It was just one report that said that he left shaken, which, I mean, I'm more likely to believe that he was not affected.
Yeah. I also want to say, no one else is going to be able to appreciate the squintiness you had to do to read that article. So I'm going to thank you for everyone. That was really great. And I know it had to have been difficult.
It was so blurry because it was a bad quality picture, and it was teeny tiny fine newspaper print from the 1920s.
Yeah. I was reading one today from the, like, 90s, and it was difficult. So I can imagine from the 20s it was very difficult. So good job.
Sorry about the up close on my face.
No, you did a great job.
In the early 1990s, the property was investigated by Christopher Chacon, who was a parapsychologist, anomalist, and paranormal investigator.
That's too many things.
It was the trifecta.
He's a busy guy.
And this was the only sanctioned investigation of the house. His results were apparently inconclusive on if the house was actually haunted. He said that of the subjects that reported paranormal experiences, 71 of their experiences were subjective and could not be objectively corroborated. So they were, like, hearing sounds or saying they were hearing sounds, but they couldn't prove any of it. So it's all subjective. There have been a number of strange events reported at the Winchester House for many years, and they continue to be reported today. Dozens of psychics have visited the house over the years, and most have come away convinced or claim to be convinced that spirits still wander the place, in addition to the ghost of Sarah Winchester. There have also been many other sightings throughout the years. In the years that the house has been open to the public, employees and visitors alike have had unusual encounters there. There have been footsteps banging on doors, mysterious voices, windows that bang so hard that they shatter, cold spots, strange moving lights, doorknobs that turn by themselves.
Nope, I don't like that.
One tour guide said in an interview that she felt that the spirits that left in the house were good. There wasn't, like, any kind of malevolent presence. Okay. Supposedly, the third floor is known to be active. The tour guides and people who work in the house will not go onto the third floor at night.
Ooh.
It was the servants' quarters when Sarah was alive, and guests have reported hearing footsteps and disembodied voices whispering their names.
No.
And I did collect four separate ghost stories from Mercury News, and these stories came from tour guides at the Winchester House.
Ugh, voices should be fully bodied, not disembodied.
Yeah, yeah. So, per some of the guides in the house, some of Sarah Winchester's loyal workmen and house servants may still be looking after the place, according to sightings of figures or the feeling of a presence reported many times over the years by tour guides and visitors alike. One frequent apparition is a man with jet black hair, believed to have been a former handyman. He's been seen repairing the fireplace in the ballroom or pushing an equally spectral wheelbarrow, if wheelbarrows indeed linger in the beyond, down a long dark hallway.
That's, like, kind of cute, actually.
As we've been talking about in all these hauntings that we've been discussing, apparently the people like to continue doing their jobs in the afterlife.
Ugh, Never tires.
Another guide said that several years ago, a man working on one of the many restoration projects in the mansion started his day early in a section with several fireplaces known as the Hall of Fires.
Ooh.
That sounds like a really scary place to be.
Ominous.
The house was dead quiet.
Was that supposed to be a pun?
Before tours got underway, and he was working up on a ladder when he felt someone tap him on the back.
Oh, no.
He turned to ask what the person wanted, and no one was there.
Nope.
Reassuring himself he'd just imagined the sensation, he went back to his work only to experience what felt like someone pushing up against his back. And he'd had enough. He hurried down the ladder, crossed the estate, and started on another project, figuring that someone or something didn't want him working in the Hall of Fires.
I wonder how... So this was a guide there, right? Oh, no.
That was...
Said. So
no.
I was working there.
Yeah.
I wonder how that works if you... how that works if you're called into, like a handyman, and you're like, this is a haunted house, though. Like, do you repair it? Like, that seems... I don't know. Above and beyond the job description.
Well, I mean, they were restoring it, so. A tour guide recently led visitors to the room, the Daisy bedroom, where Sarah Winchester was trapped during that 1906 quake.
Mm-hmm.
The guide was about to begin her little spiel when a very clear sigh came from the small hallway outside the door.
Nope.
Thinking one of her guests had merely fallen behind, she turned to call the person into the room, but saw no one.
Nope.
Then, as her eyes adjusted to the darkened hallway, she did see something. The form of a small, dark person slowly emerged, gliding around a corner.
Oh, no.
The guide quickly stepped around the corner and again saw nothing, but heard yet another deep sigh. She felt sure it was the tiny form of Sarah Winchester, who again was only 4'10", perhaps peeved to find people in her favorite bedroom.
So, I've been giving my mom a hard time about not going into this house, but as you're reading... Mom, I understand, and I'm not mad at you anymore.
Oh, goodness. So when Sarah was building the house, one thing we did kind of skip over, she took building suggestions from spirits via seances.
No, I said that.
One of these spirits is a man named Clyde. Sarah supposedly told Clyde to stay behind and take care of the house after she died. According to a local psychic, Clyde does still indeed wander the halls of the house. He's happy to do so, though he misses Mrs. Winchester's organ music. He's especially active in the basement. He's been spotted by the old coal chute down there.
Well, how is that fair that she asks him to stay after she dies? And he's already dead. Like, that doesn't seem fair.
I mean, they were friends, and he's happy to do something for her, and she's still there.
You're right.
I did attempt to watch an episode of Ghost Adventures on the house, but it got so stupid, so ridiculous, so fast. Like, the prompt for the episode, I got so excited. It said, Zach, Nick, and Aaron conduct an experiment to channel spirits from their past to the Winchester Mystery House. The team collects compelling evidence, but when Aaron's demeanor visibly alters, drastic decisions must be made. I thought that maybe they were, like, calling some other ghosts to join the ghosts that were already there. No, they just didn't see anything, so they decided that the house was like a... I don't even know, like, not a portal, but something, like, that's connected to other houses that they've been to in the United States, no. And they were trying to call the spirits there.
That's them reaching
to trap them in the house. I don't even know.
And not grasping. That's whiffing.
Yeah. They did have, there was this one funny part. They had issues wandering around the house during the day because it's so confusing. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys was like, I'm so confused. How are we going to do this in the dark? And I really felt that. There was a one point where they swear they saw something move down a hallway, and they went to go talk to a tour guide, but the dummies brought Winchester rifles into the house.
Bruh.
So the tour guide suggested that that could be why they thought they saw something. The ghost stirred at the sight of the gun, because that's what caused them to attach to Sarah for so long in her life. Supposedly, they recorded quote-unquote demons calling them by name, but they played the... what's EVPs back, and it sounded like it just sounded like gibberish. Apparently they're like, they said we need to leave right now. I'm like, okay.
But really quick, you started talking about EVPs and the audio just went like and it just scared the shit out of me. I just want to get through your part so we can get to my part.
Yeah, so they had some pretty cool stories from the tour guides, but again, you're a tour guide for a house that's supposedly haunted, but I'm still not completely sold on the idea that the house is haunted. I just think, I do believe that Sarah was. I'm just not completely convinced that the house is. Okay. I could, like, I was struggling to find stories on that house.
Yeah, like, I could find things just because they'd pop up whenever I was doing research. And it's like, yeah, they think it's haunted, but no one can really tell you why. Like, I even went to Reddit and I couldn't really find anything. Mm-hmm. But that's a good segue. If you're not going to buy into the whole it's haunted, she's haunted, maybe you'll buy into the conspiracy theory with the house.
Go ahead, because I just scrolled all the way down to my last little bit so that I'm not even reading yours. Tell me about it.
Okay. I'm doing this research, and when I tell you it's literally one guy that wrote the book on this theory, I went so deep down a rabbit hole, like my eyes started twitching, and it was like, everything I know is a lie because of Sarah Winchester. Okay.
The things she does for you guys. So somebody send her an email, because she's...
I'm going crazy.
I mean, eye twitching and everything. Like,
I'm really serious. Like, because I got to one of those pages where, like, the background was just repeating symbols. And it wasn't quite alien black background lime green writing, but it was almost there. Like, it was the step to get there. And, like, my eye just started twitching. And I was like, how far have I fallen?
Way deep into Scientology. That's where you went.
I might as well. And I don't even, like, to preface, don't even like conspiracy theories, because it just makes my brain implode, and the eye twitching, and, like, the everyone's got to know about this. Yeah, this is why.
Okay, so tell us.
I know. Okay. It may be that Sarah was creating a mystery mansion not to appease vengeful spirits, but to fill it with puzzles and encryptions inspired by the work of philosopher Sir Francis Bacon. And if you don't know about him, I'm going to talk a little bit about him and why he's important, so don't get your tinfoil hat in a wad. This theory would suggest that Sarah was a member of a mystic society like the Rosicrucians, a secret society like the Freemasons, or possibly both.
All right.
Instead of finding answers to the mansion's mysteries in Sarah's mental state or in her contact with the afterlife, or if she's haunted, if it's haunted, what have you, perhaps the answers lie hidden in the ballroom, the Shakespeare windows, and the iron gates of the house. Now, before I go any further, I am going to note that this theory comes from Richard Wagner, who literally wrote the book. If you want to know more, because I went down the rabbit hole and then I realized, hey, you actually have to go and make a living. And so I pulled myself back up. But if you want to just dive headfirst into the rabbit hole, his book is The Lost Secret of William Shakespeare. Now, Wagner, like some of you others, I'm looking at you, Blake, firmly disputes the ghost story view of the Winchester Mansion lore. Instead, he presents the secret mystic society argument. Now, to understand his theory, we need to just hop into our DeLorean and take a quick trip back in time to Sarah's childhood. He argues that Sarah grew up in an environment riddled with Masonic, Rosicrucian, and Baconian influences, and that these influences had a profound effect on her. Now, these are a lot of words, and I kind of fell into the thing where I'm like, oh yeah, I know what those things are because I've heard of them, but I don't really. So very, 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 very briefly, here's just a little background of each of those concepts that I mentioned. So Baconian concepts, which come from philosopher Sir Francis Bacon, include methodical observation of facts as a means of studying and interpreting natural phenomena. His method was basically a precursor to the scientific method. So we're all familiar with that, but the Baconian method came first. And it consisted of three main steps: the description of facts, the classification of facts into three categories, and the rejection of whatever appears to not be connected with a phenomenon under investigation, and the determination of what it is connected with. It's basically saying, like, a way to kind of process information in a standardized way about the world, I think.
Without actually testing anything in an experiment like the scientific method and actually having physical evidence that your stuff
is
true.
I think it's the yes, but I do think it's the start to finding that evidence. Like, it was kind of the first step.
I mean, obviously you have to, like, make observations and come up with, like, form, like, you know, hypotheses and inferences and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that part down. He was, like, making
this
little
before all of that
decisions and whatnot.
He was also known to be obsessed with the number 13 and the Fibonacci sequence, both of which can be found in Sarah's house. So just a little note there.
Yep.
Now, the Rosicrucians are members of a worldwide brotherhood claiming to possess esoteric wisdom handed down from ancient times. Their origins and teachings are described in three anonymously published books. Their beliefs are associated with alchemy and mysticism. And Rosicrucianism drew many thinkers and philosophers of the day, including Sir Francis Bacon. So that's kind of the connection there. And this is a little more like mysticism, quote unquote, magic, if you will. Last but not least, the beliefs of the Freemasons somewhat vary from lodge to lodge because there are different lodges throughout the world, but all Freemasons believe in these three concepts: brotherly love, which is love for each other and for all mankind, relief, which is charity for others and mutual aid for fellow Masons, and truth, the search for answers to the universal questions of morality and salvation of the soul that only a man's individual faith and his relationship with God can provide. I am going to go off on a tangent really quick. So I won this award in high school that was, I don't know, I think it was like the Honesty and Integrity and True, I don't know, it was some award like that, from the Masonic Lodge in the city where I grew up. So we had one, and I could point it out to you next time we're in town. So we get it, and they gave, so a boy and a girl from each of the area high schools got it. Four of us ended up going for the ceremony, and when I tell you, I can still remember the ceremony was the most bizarre thing I've ever experienced in my life. Like, it's all, it's typically, there were women Freemasons, obviously, like, Sarah Wagner saying is linked to this. So there were women, but typically it's men. So it was like all these old men were there, and they had kind of like a little reception with food. And then we go upstairs, and when I tell you, we walk into a room that was the size of my house, but it was just like, it wasn't extra rooms. Like, it was just one big room. Chairs were lined around the wall where the Masons would sit, and there were four chairs in the middle where the people that won the awards would sit. I felt like I was being sacrificed.
Yeah, that's a pretty natural response.
And it was like everyone
there
just like moved the way they were supposed to, and we're all just sitting there, and all these guys are like, we're in the middle of the circle with all these people staring at us, and they're,
or it's like some kind of initiation.
Yes, it was so, and I mean, it was fine. It was great. You know, got this beautiful pin. It was an experience I will never forget. But it was kind of the first time where I'm like, huh, there might be something to these societies. You know what I mean? And then my next clue was whenever I got initiated into the sorority that I was in for a hot minute, because that also felt like I was getting initiated into a cult. But that's another story for another day. Back to Sarah. Wagner says that she was a child prodigy just like Sir Francis Bacon, which if she was multilingual and could play several instruments like our research claims, I can't really argue with that assertion. Additionally, at the time of Sarah's formative years, New Haven, specifically Yale University, was known as being a hub of progressive Freemasonic Rosicrucian thinking and activity. As such, several of Sarah's uncles and cousins were also Freemasons. Now at Yale, Sarah got into, it wasn't like Yale University, but it was Yale University's, quote, Young Ladies Collegiate Institute. And there she was taught by the Root brothers, who were both known to be Rosecroy Freemasons, not LaCroix, Rosecroy, which meant they were members of one of the oldest orders of Freemasons. So what's more is at school, Sarah became friends with the nieces of Delia Bacon, who is no relation to Sir Francis Bacon. I promise the story will get less confusing. But she wrote a treatise that Sir Francis Bacon, along with other literary minds of the Elizabethan Jacobean age, was the actual author of the original works of Shakespeare. So she was saying his original works couldn't have been written by one person. It had to have been written by Sir Francis Bacon along with these other literary minds of the time. Her work was sponsored by Nathaniel Hawthorne and supported by Ralph Waldo Emerson and Mark Twain.
Wow.
Right, like I read this and I'm like, bullshit.
The big
ones.
But
then she's got all these backers, so you have to kind of wonder. She traveled around New Haven and Connecticut giving talks on her kind of doctrine. So the city of New Haven kind of became known as the birthplace of the Baconist Shakespeare doctrine. Yeah, have you ever heard of that Baconist Shakespeare?
Mm-mm.
So my other cousin Brittany, who I think has like a degree in Brit Lit, like loves British literature. I was like falling down my rabbit hole. I was like, shoo, there goes Caroline down the rabbit hole. And I discovered this and I was like, I'm going to just, you know, I love to stir the pot. So I texted her to see what she thought of this. And I thought I was going to get scolded because I wanted to see what she felt in the debate. But clearly I was very far down the rabbit hole. And like Brittany kind of offered me like a little bit of light and fresh air when she just calmly said, no, I don't believe in it because I don't see any evidence. So that's a Brit Lit teacher and she didn't believe it, but she did save me a little bit, gave me a quick reality check where I'm like, why aren't more people talking about this? And it's like, well, there's no evidence. So anyway, so growing up around all these influences, Wagner suggests that Sarah adhered to the theosophical concept of viewing the universe as ever building. So really quick, theosophy is basically teaching about God and the world based on mystical thought. But the ever-building concept is an interesting one, especially where Sarah Winchester is concerned.
Because she was ever building that house.
See,
that
circle is starting to connect. I could see you were about to fall asleep, but don't leave me yet, okay? It all connects. Okay, so, you know, I'm, you know, quote unquote, throwing nonsense at you. You may be wondering, yeah, like, where's the secret society proof? Yeah, she was around all these, coincidentally was around all of this secret society lore, but where's her evidence? Well, I'll tell you. We're just gonna take a little walk through the house and I'll show you. So as we mentioned, the house is set up like a labyrinth. Now in ancient times, an initiate to one of these secret organizations, like the Freemasons or the Rosicrucians, was subject to a test called the labyrinth, where they would have to find their way out in order to make it to the next step in membership. The purpose was to develop and hone powers of intuition and insights.
So are we thinking like the third task of the Triwizard Tournament, like hedge maze style, or like the Shining hedge maze, or like not outdoor hedge maze, more like labyrinthian? I don't know.
For some reason, I was thinking of the Percy Jackson novel because it was like inside.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to go with.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know if there's a Goblin King at the end of this one, though, unfortunately.
No David Bowie in glitter
and tie pants. What a legend. So it's possible that Sarah created her house as a test for initiates. Now, starting at the front of the house, you can see a path that may parallel the journey of initiates to these secret societies in ancient times. The front of the house faces true east, which represents a source of light. Each iron gate where visitors must enter is decorated with a sun symbol with 16 radiants. That's 16 little, whenever you draw your sun, your little rays of sunshine, that's a radiant, which may represent the year that Shakespeare died, 1616. And that would have been when things changed for Bacon. Because if the Bacon is Shakespeare doctrine is to be believed, then this would have been the year that they would have lost their kind of like front man. So things would have changed for Bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And then specifically, Sarah's gates had an 8-petal daisy in the center, which, like, as I'm reading and you were talking about the daisy room, I do think it's funny that the daisy room was her favorite. And then the gates with the sun have daisies in the middle that had 8 petals and could have represented innocence and fidelity. The palms that frame the entrance call back to the Masonic pillars of Boaz and Jachin. The switchback staircase, which you ascend upon first entering the house. And from what I read, I've never been, so I didn't want to say it, but you enter the house like in the northwest corner, not through the front, which is also something to do with secret society, specifically Masonic lore. But the switchback staircase is in the shape of an Archimedes spiral. It has 44 tiny steps, each about 2 inches high, so it's really more like a ramp. And the staircase has 7 turns. So it's supposed to be a play on Jacob's Ladder, which is a ramp that winds around 7 turns until it reaches heaven and is found heavily in Masonic lore. Now, the ballroom, where the initiate's journey would eventually begin, has elongated stained glass windows that use a winding banner from Bacon's designs. Now, it's the quotes in these banners that people think if you figure it out, you will figure out the secrets to the house. So the quotes from Shakespeare that it includes are, quote, "Wide unclasp the table of their thoughts," end quote, from Troilus and Cressida. And this line comes from the play, obviously. "It begs many to ask open-ended questions still unanswered." So that's kind of the whole thing behind that play, and maybe has something to do with why she picked that line. The second line is from Richard II, and it says, "These same thoughts people this little world." And it's at this point in the play where King Richard was deposed as king and trying to create a world within his cell using only his imagination. So the first one comes from asking questions, and the second one is creating a world using your imagination. And kind of has to wonder, like, sort of fits in with the whole shtick of her house. So just saying. Yeah, so there were other things where it's like, and they have this many things means this, and if you go here, it means this, and actually the spider windows mean this. And it was just, I couldn't take it anymore. But the ballroom with the Shakespeare windows is kind of the biggest thing that I wanted to mention. It's also said that they found a hidden safe in the ballroom. And according to legend, it was supposed to be if you found the hidden safe, you'd be rich beyond measure. But when they did find it, it was just filled with hair from Sarah's husband and daughter, which is, you know, a little bit tragic. So all of these factors may suggest that Sarah's house was leading someone, an initiate, an adventurer, two basic blonde podcasters, on a journey or a treasure trail of discovery through her house. And it wasn't about being haunted at all. So there's the conspiracy theory for you. I can breathe again.
Well, I guess you guys can decide for yourselves if you think the house is haunted. Was Sarah haunted? Was it all a conspiracy? Which, the safe with the hair, I was watching the movie Winchester with Helen Mirren earlier, and she did open up a safe at one point and pull out a small lock of hair from Annie in a little box. But to bring us back from that trip down the rabbit hole that we all just went on. But there are a few fun facts about Sarah's house in pop culture today, because we always have to bring it back here. My favorite fun fact, for those of you that are very into American Horror Story like I am, the Hotel Cortez in American Horror Story Hotel, that's season 5, was partly inspired by this house. Maze-like halls, doors that lead nowhere, and ghosts everywhere. It was the Winchester House, along with H.H. Holmes' murder mansion in Chicago, which, believe me, we are going to get there eventually.
I thought it was so funny when you texted me when you were in Chicago and you were like, they don't have the murder mansion anymore. And I'm like, no shit.
No, somebody burned it down. Yeah, but it was those two houses that made it possible to bring the Hotel Cortez to life. And if you decide to watch the movie, like I did this afternoon, the movie does get a few things right. One quote that really I was just like, yeah. Sarah said, it's quite a special house, is it not? And she is correct. She always wore black. She had a mourning veil over her face. The house was super weird. Holmes' bizarre features include door that leads to nowhere. Earthquake damaged the house, because, of course, that's the coolest part of all the history, was the earthquake and the most dramatic part. So, of mm-hmm. course, that would be in the movie. Sarah died around the age of 82. Visitors insist it's haunted by Clyde and the wheelbarrow ghost. I did go on YouTube while I was looking for stories about the house being haunted. And there was an interview from Helen Mirren. And she said that she'd never heard of the house before she was cast. But she's fascinated now, and she said that she does feel like Sarah's spirit is in the house, but she wanted to clarify that she didn't think it was her ghost. It was just more like you got a sense of who Sarah was when you were in the house. Like, everything that she chose carefully for that house, you kind of got a sense of her as a person. And like, she's still there in the way that she built the house.
Built it from the ground up, and it was only from her mind. There was no master plan, mm-hmm. so I can see how that would make sense.
Yep, so there we go. That was deep, deep dive into the Winchester Mystery House in San Jose, California.
Wow, what a rush.
I read the story last week, so you need to pull up our other fan story.
Yes. We have two fans going at it trying to be our biggest fans. They're tied right now because they're both great. Okay, so this story is called The Red Lady and comes from our cousin, CJ. Shout out to you. Thanks for being so supportive. It reads, Dear ladies of It's Hereditary Pod, in my quest to become your number one fan of It's Hereditary Pod, this is my quick and possibly not accurate rendition of the Huntingdon College's very own The Red Lady. Which is so interesting. You never hear Red Lady. It's always like white ladies.
Mm-hmm. They're always dressed in white, which we will get there one day too.
So quite a few years ago, there was this college student that lived in the Pratt dormitory. Now, this lady was very distinct in the fact she always wore red. It is my understanding she was continually ridiculed for this and even led to her roommate moving out. So it got to the point where she just had no friends, and this went on for some time. It finally got to the point where she just couldn't take it anymore, so sadly and tragically, she hung herself on the second floor in the community bathroom. Today, the second floor of the dormitory is condemned, and people venture to the floor in hopes of spotting the Red Lady. I don't have any cool stories or know of anyone that's seen her, but it is haunted. Now, there are several other ghosts that haunt the Huntingdon campus. There's a little boy that drowns in a pond that haunts the bridge as students cross over. There is a ghost in the library that continually opens a window. If the window is shut and locked, it will be seen later that day open. I guess this kind of turned into the haunting of Huntingdon College, but maybe this will secure my spot at the top as your number one fan of It's Hereditary Pod. Thanks, gals, and I hope to see y'all soon. Signed, CJ, your favorite cousin. So he really gave us the whole shebang of, wow, I can't believe I went to his college for his graduation, knowing all of that.
Yeah, good job, CJ. It kind of makes me want to go do some research to see if LSU was on it. Is.
Old war school.
It's got to be somebody.
I have zero interest in knowing if I do know. Pleasant Hall is haunted.
Of course Pleasant Hall is haunted.
I was doing some research on some stuff around here, and I was like, I literally just applied. I was looking at jobs in Pleasant Hall, and I was like, well, nope.
There got to be some ghosts over in Hergett, too.
Okay, so please send us your stories. We really love hearing them, even the haunted ones. But we do want to hear more about true crime. We want to hear your, you know,
cautionary tales from your, yeah.
I don't know if we've shared our hometown murders, but we'll share those eventually, because I know I have some. I know you have some.
We have at least one. My mom found a body once.
Rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Five stars. Really helps us out a lot. We're looking at getting advertisers. Spread the word about us. We're having so much fun, and we really appreciate all of the support we're getting. So if you could do, like, just that one itsy-weetsy, tiny, whiny little thing for us, it would really, really help. Email us your stories. itshereditarypod@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. If you search It's Hereditary Pod, you'll find us. We're there, or we'll find you. Yeah. Next week, do you want to announce it? Are you excited?
I do. Next week, I am so excited. I love mine. I'm terrified because it's local to me and it's very relevant right now.
I feel like I know which one you're doing, but...
We are doing cults as our true crime episode for next week.
You're never alone, you know? You can join our little group and we'll make it a cult, you know? Join our cult.
That's fine. Yeah. We'll make t-shirts eventually for our cult.
It's going to be amazing.
It'll be great.
And I think that's that. So sweet dreams, everyone.
Good night.